Good afternoon, Bloomington. 606 News Talk, 96.1 AM 1370 WGCLRadio.com. The In the Zone radio program coming to you live the first Monday of July, July 6, 2015. Hopefully some of you are still on a four-day or three-day weekend, depending on which side of the dial you've hit. So we hope you had a great 4th of July. 10 fingers, 10 toes if you want to dial us up. 812-333-2665. Terry Stoltz riding shotgun tonight as Novak. He's probably going to be on the mend for a couple days as he witnessed the Grateful Dead's final three shows in Chicago over the weekend. That was Friday, Saturday, and last night. So I'm guessing it was probably a good idea that he took this one off.
We only assume that he witnessed them all. I'm sure he did, and that's great. No, I know he was having a good time. Saw a few pictures.
He should
from
be.
Him.
And after looking at the set list from all three nights, Wow, good stuff there. I figure if you're going to end a 50-year run in some way, shape, or form, you should bring out all the heavy hitters, and it looked like they did. So fun stuff there. We'll get a recap from Dave on Wednesday. But Terry and I will get you through your Monday evening as you get home or you're on the back deck doing nothing. And we hope that's more the case than working right now. As summer feels like summer today, nice and hot and humid, nice and warm. But tomorrow looks like we're going to have some thunderstorm problems. So keep an eye on that, and you can find it all at WGCLRadio.com. Do you have a good 4th of July?
Fantastic 4th of July.
We saw you riding in the parade, obviously. You were one of the last floats to go out there.
Oh, yeah. We were 98 out of 100. Had a great time on the
The 100th float is the street sweeper here in Bloomington.
Well,
he was busy because the horses were out on that day as well. So it was just warm enough to make sure you knew that the horses were out. But there you were, the back of the fire truck, Rod Young's classic. How long has he been putting that in the parade for?
41 years. And our friend Larry, that calls the show, also was there.
Was he really? Very nice.
Yeah, it was a beautiful day.
I thought I saw him waving, but I couldn't tell. But you were smart. You were in the farthest back part, faced.
Yes.
Rear end towards the truck, facing outward, so you weren't in a heat box of other people crammed in there like sardines.
I was told that's the place we needed to be, and I always try to take her advice, so we went to the back of the bus, and it was great. It's I've never been in the parade.
Oh, I wouldn't
before.
Have a clue.
And
no
it is.
Idea.
It's really. It's amazing how many people there were watching.
Yeah,
it really is.
And when you have great weather, it's
great.
A Saturday, that doesn't hurt anything. Because sometimes when you get a Thursday parade, people take off already for the weekend, so they don't get to see the parade. So it was great stuff and fun weekend at all. But capping the weekend off, very busy on the basketball front, the Indiana Pacers. Boy, what a difference a week makes. We sit here last Monday trying to figure out, was Monte Ellis going to show up? Or what's he going to do? What's that going to provide? What's going to happen to Hibbert? It was a Monday at 11:59 where he had to sign or didn't sign or whatever with that. Rodney Stuckey, Roy Hibbert, David West is on the move as well. And try to figure out who the Pacers will have rostered for at least the early part of the 2015-16 season. Summer League got underway. Rave reviews for Miles Turner, who I want to call Miles Davis every time because he's so funky. That's good problems to have as well. So the new-look Pacers, Terry and I will get into that. But we'll stay with the patriotic theme of the weekend and the Stars and Stripes. Finished up the weekend in fine fashion, world champions as the USA Women's World Cup team victorious over Japan, a rematch of the 2011 final. The women blasting the doors off the Japanese, 5-2. Carly Lloyd had a hat trick in 16 minutes. That'll put you down in any kind of book about soccer for the rest of time, as long as they keep writing books or online books or podcasts or whatever.
Whichever,
it could be.
Yeah.
The USA revenge tour happens. They lost in penalties in 2011, Terry, to the Japanese. The Japanese were looking to join the U.S. and Germans as the only teams that have repeated in winning a Women's World Cup. But again, the USA puts the third star on the jersey as they join their championships of 1995 and 1999 with the rout in progress that was 2015. And even if you don't like soccer, even if you don't know much about the game, even if you were just tuning in to see, hey, the winner of this wins a world championship, you don't get to see that once but every 4 years, you are in for a treat. You didn't have to stick around for 85 minutes and tell me about how the goal should be wider, how the field should be smaller, how there should be less players, how this goal should count for 9 points or 1 point. the USA didn't give you a chance to crack your beer open, and they were well on their way to victory. You took in the game. I was proud of you. Good job. I know you're not the biggest soccer fan in the world, but that's a good step.
Well, you and Dave are trying to get me to at least
take a look.
Understand some of it, and I did. Now, after a brisk round of golf at Cascades International, I headed over to a local establishment, picked up the score on the radio, heard we're up 2-0. I said, great.
Already, all right.
So I get in there, and, of course, every TV's on there, and it didn't take me long to see two more goals, boom, boom. And
the goals you saw were probably two of the best. The USA opened the scoring on the third minute as we call it a training ground play, Terry, because that play should never work in a World Cup final, where I believe Rapinoe took the corner, and she plays a daisy cutter to the penalty spot, and here comes Carly Lloyd. The Japanese know Carly Lloyd awfully well. She scored two against them in the Olympics. She wasn't a hidden quantity. She had scored in the last three USA games. If there was anyone you're going to mark running from anywhere on a set piece, it's going to be Carly Lloyd. The Japanese were late to get off their mark. They were late to get off the bus. They were late for everything.
They were
yesterday.
Late everywhere.
Oh, my goodness. And Lloyd beats the Japanese defender to the spot, hits it sweetly with the outside of her left boot, 1-0. And before you could put the red, white, and blue streamers down, it was two goals.
we put a full court press on, so to speak.
Unbelievable.
And a fast break.
And the Japanese looked like they'd never seen pace. They look like they've never seen athleticism like this. And the irony is the Japanese were one of the best organized teams coming into the final. They had one of the easier roads on the other side of the bracket. They had to play upstarts England in the semifinal. England was delighted just to be there. They find a way to win that game. And the USA is up two goals within 5 minutes as Lloyd is first to it in a scrum in the penalty box and hooks one home from 2 yards out. It's 2-0, and the place is rocking.
Well, I mean, I was just amazed, and even a novice, you know, I'm like, well, we're just, in essence, in an NFL parlance, we're running the ball down their throat. There's nothing they could do. And, hey, Ernie Yarborough, if you're listening out there and at Stetson, would you have ever been that far out of goal during
the fourth one?
I don't know what she was thinking.
No.
And then a tough luck as she's backpedaling and almost made it and fell down. But why would she so far out?
It was poorly positioned.
We'll get
to that chronologically because I think it's fun to see how this all. So the Japanese response was give the ball back to the U.S. Actually, they had a decent half chance in that frame. The U.S. gets the ball again. It's just minding their own business. Knocks the ball down the field. The Japanese player heads the ball up in the air, and everybody watches it come down. And Lauren Cheney Holiday from Ben Davis runs onto it, catches it full volley, and smokes it in the back of the net. So again, the Japanese defense on the first three goals, Terry, were completely out to lunch. They looked like they had never played together. It looked like the first time they were introduced to themselves. One of the problems the USA had through this tournament was where are they going to score any goals from? Goals were tough to come by. Defense was fine. There was no angle about that. But it's 3-0 after 12 minutes, and the game's over. And in a game of that magnitude with the trophy on the line, USA would have played 7 at the back for the last 20 minutes, up 3-0. Japan wouldn't have smelled anything or sniffed anything. And the point I'm going to make is at 3-0 down, if you're the goalkeeper for the Japanese and you're finally in the American half knocking the ball around, standing at the top of your penalty area is probably common. Standing 15 more yards out is probably not that bad because if you need a quick outlet, the ball comes back to you and you can switch the point of attack. So it's not unheard of. It's not helping anything. And Carly Lloyd, I'm going to give her more credit for hitting a perfect shot than I'm going to give the Japanese goalkeeper for, I don't want to say wandering, because she's the, at that point, you have to try everything to keep the pressure on to get a goal to get back into that match. So she's out, probably the last outlet, again, to swing the ball, or if they get caught in a tight spot, they can play it back and don't have to worry about the USA's pace catching onto it and breaking out. So there's kind of a strategy to that. It obviously didn't work. It wasn't the best. But for Lloyd to intercept that pass, take one touch around the defender, look up. At 3-0's the perfect time when you try that. And to hit the target from 55 yards, amped up as she was, the goalkeeper running back, and then you see it in slow motion, the slight trip, just like in every bad dream you have, gets a hand on it, and you know when she got a hand on it, you already knew the first 15 minutes were bad, and the 16th minute wasn't getting any better.
That's where, as you would teach an outfielder or a defensive back,
turn,
you turn and run, and then find the ball.
And hopefully but it hits anyway, you in the back of the head. Hopefully it does know, something. But
tough luck. It's
hey,
okay.
Not our problem, right?
USA, USA.
Not our problem. So it's 3-0, 4-0, what, quarter of an hour in?
Right.
The tie is over. Anybody, they talked about the ratings last night during the game, and some of the people were like, well, there goes our ratings predictions because we thought we'd get more people. And I was like, wait a second. You're going to get every casual fan in America in because there's going to be no heartbreak. There's going to be no chance at losing. You're going to see a world championship. You're going to see the celebration. You're going to see the trophy. You could see three or four more goals the way that was spinning out of control. Japan got one back on the 27th minute, made it 4-1, I believe. 4-1 at halftime.
Yes.
4-2 on a Julie Johnson own goal, which was probably about the only poor thing the USA did all day. 4-2, so the Japanese right there, they tell themselves, hey, we're only down 2-0. We get one more. All we need is one more after that. We've got extra time.
And what happens?
Boom. Tobin Heath. 54th Amazing. Minute. 2 minutes later, kills the tie-off because you can only take so many punches.
Right.
Japan had made two substitutions in the first half trying to bring on more attacking players. They had to, which I'd like from their coach. He said, what are we going to do? Sit back. If we get beat 8-1 or we get beat 8-2, we have to get people moving forward. The USA was the story. Carly Lloyd is the most outstanding player. She can have whatever scoring championship. She didn't win the other scoring championship. Nobody cares. Finals hat tricks. It's the only one ever in the Women's World Cup history. It's the fastest one. If that record's broken, I'll watch that game as well because she scored 3 goals in 16 minutes.
Yeah.
So the USA trophy holders, 95, 99 in 2015, beating Japan. Revenge.
Right.
But you remember that match against Japan back in 2011. If you didn't, they showed a great highlight package right before the game started, and I think they showed some of it at halftime. The USA against Japan in Germany in the 2011 final, they had 77 chances on goal and only scored twice. They hit the bar twice. They hit this was saved, looping headers here, shots wide from here. Lloyd could have had a hat trick in the first 5 minutes. She scored and had a clean header from 12 yards and missed a post by a foot. But the point was, they had chances against the Japanese. They didn't convert the last matchup. You get the penalties, Terry. Anything can happen in penalties. Heck, Lloyd missed a penalty in that penalty shootout, I believe. You took that completely out, and you blew them right off the deck. The chances were there this time. They took them, and the USA, the only three-time champions of Women's World Cup football. France, 2019. You want to go? We'll take the channel.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
We'll do a little Wimbledon afterwards.
Oh yeah! See, there you go.
Call my my wife, and we'll
yeah,
see if
well.
we can work that out. All right, we'll get back to what we know a little bit better: the hardcore hoops, the hard courts. We'll do that. The Indiana Pacers making moves over the weekend. We'll get you caught up on that, and we'll take your phone calls 333-2665. You're in the zone on a Monday night. 6:22 at WGCL, the In the Zone Radio program, live on a Monday night, July 6, 2015. There's Terry Stultz.
Yes, yes. Welcome, everyone.
Shotgun Rider.
I haven't been here for a while. It's,
you'll be here more than you'll think
evidently,
in the next 6
shortly.
Weeks. Well, it's summertime. Everybody's got to take a little vacation time, so me and Dave will be in and out, but you will be the metronome that keeps this program on the beat until we get back to, as we like to call it, the regular season.
I'm the Mariano Rivera.
There you go. Close her out. Shut it down. Turn the lights out when you leave. And so we'll be in and out. Dave's out today. He'll be back on Wednesday. I'll be gone next Wednesday for a part. Then Dave's gone. Then I'm gone. Then Dave's gone. Then I'm gone. It's just, well, you got to go. You're not going to take your vacation time in February.
I'm coming in here 2 nights when I'm on vacation.
Oh, you are? Very
yes.
Nice. I can't.
I know.
I either have to be or I'm not. I can't do half and not the other or whatever.
Well,
else.
My real job I won't be at. I'll be in here for 2 days.
Since this is part of my real job, they don't want me doing both.
That's and right.
Sometimes that's fine because you got to get a little recharge of the battery. Because I usually just pop out at Christmas, and I don't like to go come back, you know what, January 6th and go all the way again to like December 19th. You got to take a little break. Refresh the batteries, recharge it. Everything looks fresh and clean when you come back. We'll get to the Pacers. We've got a quick segment here. We went along on the World Cup, which is fine. That's good because they deserve it. When you're world champions, you get plenty of airtime, and as well you should with all of that. So we're going to get you caught up on what's happening in the rest of the world. Tonight, baseball on the airwaves. Reds in Washington, first of three for us. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in the nation's capital, 7 p.m. is first pitch, or just slightly after, all three nights. Before the All-Star break, the Reds head to Miami for four, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We'll go 7 p.m. Thursday and Friday in South Beach, and then a 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon game, before the All-Star break starts at the Great American Ballpark in lovely Cincinnati. When my boss gets back, we'll get you all the details on that, if we're going to carry that game or the Home Run Derby, but we know the Home Run Derby is a week from tonight. Todd Frazier, Red Leg All-Star, he'll be in the Home Run Derby and the All-Star game, so we know who we're rooting for. All-Star game will be on Tuesday night, and we'll talk a little bit about that here in a couple of minutes. The Reds are back in action, as is the rest of baseball, then a week from Friday, as they invite the Indians to town for the Battle of Ohio before heading to Chicago. The Reds are going to have to start loading up. Winning six out of seven. They've shown flashes that it can happen. They won four out of five series before getting swept by Milwaukee over the weekend. The Brewers were hot. They'd won five or six in a row coming in. But I read last Friday that the Reds had beaten them 17 of the last 23 at Great American Ballpark. The bats went quiet again, and it doesn't matter. When you're 12-1, 8-1, whatever to one, that's a lot of pressure on the pitching staff. And big-time guys making big-time money, they got to hit the ball, or the Reds are going to struggle, and they are struggling at the moment. They are limping towards the break, but again, turn it around against a good Washington team.
A very good Washington
team.
Very
good, and again, sometimes they overlook teams like the Reds as the many ups and downs as they've had, and we'll see that again tonight at 7 pregame, and right after us here, you'll have first pitch from the nation's capital. Tonight, tomorrow, Wednesday, then Miami, Thursday and Friday. So real easy to remember, T, 7 o'clock every night this week. Anthony DeSclafani taking on Doug Fister. You got your pitching matchup from Washington, D.C. Busy day in Wimbledon. It's one of the best tennis days, the Lynn Loring Tennis Report. Serena beat Venus. Some other heavy hitters. Moving on, Caroline Wozniacki, Rory McIlroy's ex-lady friend, was upset today at Wimbledon. And speaking of McIlroy, tough news this morning, waking up to read that. Rory played a little football over the weekend, you know, the kind the English do and the Irish do, and then the American women did the other day. And unlike the American women, did not leave the weekend unscathed. snapping a ligament in his ankle and some other technical mumbo-jumbo mess. Rory McIlroy is in severe doubt for the British Open that begins in 2 weeks.
I'll tell you what, if it's that bad, I can't see how he could play, Glass. I mean, it's which ankle was it?
It is his left ankle. And okay. I'm left-handed, so that's an opposite swing thought for me. That's all the drive going forward, isn't it, off your left side?
Yeah, the right one would be the one he'd push off, and he'd come down on the left. And in the game of golf and the way he swings, I don't know. I just the walking.
Force?
It's the walking. It's the walking that's going to bother.
The good news, St. Andrews is
a
links course,
flat.
Right? It's right there, but you still have to walk practice rounds. You still have to walk that.
He'll try it. I mean, he'll try it.
I don't think.
Man, I don't know how he could do it.
He'll try it until his doctors say trying it's going to damage it. So he's pulled out of this week's Scottish Open. That was going to be his final tune-up before St. Andrews, the home of golf. If you'll remember, last time they played in St. Andrews at 2010, I believe he was 21. He shot 63-80 to open and shot 69-68 to finish and was third with 80.
With the 80.
The problem with St. Andrews is they only play it once every 5 years or so. So he will miss out, perhaps, unless this thing gets healed up, which makes things interesting for American Jordan Spieth. Spieth has already won the first two legs of the Grand Slam, Terry, and now the number one player in the world is severely incapacitated. That doesn't mean anything except he'll only have 154 guys to beat instead of 155 guys to beat. But if you'd have told me that 2 weeks ago, that's a little bit interesting.
It will be. We'll see. My gut feeling tells me he will go there. He will try his best to play, and he'll probably know after a couple practice rounds if he can play it or not.
If he even takes any practice rounds, he might come out and say, hey, you know what?
Let's go.
I'm going to try this on Thursday, and if I post a number that's decent, and who knows if I'm on the right side of the draw and everybody else shoots a million on the other side, I might gut it out and see what happens. The good news about McIlroy's injury, before people start saying, well, look what happened to Tiger after he hurt his knee and did all that. I'm not going to argue with you. When Tiger Woods in 2008 broke his leg and tore up his knee winning the U.S. Open beating Rocco Media, he hasn't won a major since. How old was Tiger when he did that? It was 7 years ago. He's 32.
32.
McIlroy's 26. And when you look at those two things, 32 and 26, that's a big difference. My body healed a lot faster. Well, I can't remember that far back. But 26-year-olds heal a little bit quicker than 32-year-olds. And ligament damage isn't
It's a sprained ankle unless he tore
it. But he tore it all the way.
He won't be golfing next week.
But it's an ankle deal where he's not sprinting for a living. He is not dunking a basketball for a living. The knee's a little bit different with Woods' problem because, number one, he had two fractures and he had a torn ACL, I believe, on top of all that and torn everything else. Twisting and turning on that, again, that's going to be something to take some time. But the interesting angle with all this is, will McIlroy hurry up and come back and prolong it and where it just bothers him the rest of the year? I don't know. How many guys have you ever seen in besides in basketball say, man, I got an ankle problem, I'm done? It doesn't happen. So no. McIlroy should be on the up and up. He's already a workout guy, so rehabbing isn't going to bother him. This is going to upset his normal routine. Mm. But it's just tough for the world of golf because, obviously, Jordan Spieth looking at a shot. No one's ever done the career Grand Slam. Bobby Jones did the old-fashioned one with the amateur, and Matt, or whatever that was. That's not the order of the day. The Tiger Slam is the closest we've seen in 2000. So.
And you want your world's number one there, especially with number two having won the first two majors. It's just adds to the drama.
It does. And McIlroy, you hate to see it happen. And the people that say, well, that's why you shouldn't be out there kicking a soccer ball. You should. Oh, come on. He's 26 years old. What are you going to do? Sit in his mom's basement all day and watch fireworks on TV? Come on. He's a millionaire. He makes $50 million a year. What do you think he's going to do? Sit home and sit on it? Watch the interest grow daily, minutely? No, that's not going to happen.
He's going to now. He's going to set with his leg up now.
He's going to be in the gym rehabbing it and doing all the exercises to hopefully get it better. But, again, leave the kids alone, for goodness sakes. Who cares? Guy wants to go out and have some fun with his buddies. It's a freak accident. How many times have you been walking around the backyard, you step in a gopher hole or a mole hole, and you twist your ankle? These things happen. You can't live in a bubble. That doesn't work out. The Seinfeld episode should have taught us all about that. All right, we have put off the Pacers long enough. We'll take your phone calls. Are they moving in the right direction? 812-333-2665. Over the weekend, they re-signed Rodney Stuckey, the Pacers' mini microwave, as I like to call him off the bench. It reminds you of Vinnie Johnson from the old Piston days. Stuckey took a $1.5 million contract and turned it into $21 million. That's not a bad investment vehicle there. The Pacers added Monte Ellis and allegedly are trading away Roy Hibbert. If you've been out of the loop all weekend, don't worry about it. Terry and I will get you all the details and show you the new look Pacers as their summer league also begins. 6:32, you're in the zone on WGCL. At WGCL. Terry and Glass with you in the zone on a Monday night, July 6th. I want to go back to June. I don't know about you. You know, a month from today, school starts?
Yes. That's unbelievable.
The only person that's excited about that's my daughter.
Well, yeah, she's ready.
She's ready to go. But let's enjoy the rest of the summer while it's right there out in front of us. A week from tonight is the All-Star Game Home Run Contest. A week from tomorrow night is the All-Star Game, the Midsummer Classic in the Great American Ballpark in lovely Cincinnati. We'll have Reds baseball for you all five nights this week, 7 p.m. start times. You don't even have to write that down. Saturday, the Reds in Miami, 4 o'clock. That's Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So we'll get you six of the last seven here in the first part of the season. Take you into the All-Star break, and then we'll fire it back up a week from Friday as Cleveland comes to town. Joe Smith's got a busy weekend this weekend. The Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame Class number five, the convention center will be the site. They might have one or two tickets left. I wouldn't think too many.
That thing sells out, has so far every year. Those guys and Lynn Hauser and Marcus Debro will be with Joe tomorrow.
Time out for sports.
That is right. And those guys just do a tremendous job. And
they do, raising money. The scholarships this year went up from $500 to $1,000. So
yes.
Great news for all the recipients, three from South, two from North, two from Edgewood. They'll talk about that with Lynn and Marcus tomorrow night. The Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, a little preview show. For
That's
you
right.
Live here, timeout for sports in the same 6 to 7 hour on Tuesday. The Pacers over the weekend made some moves, and some moves that haven't been officially made yet are making front page news as well. Let's start with Terry, who the Pacers do have, and we'll talk about what they need to get. First of all, Rodney Stuckey signs over the weekend for a 3-year, $21 million deal. The team and Stuckey have agreed on a 3-year contract with a player option in the third year. That's according to Candace Buckner and the Indianapolis Star. Stuckey had a career year in his first season with the Pacers, and that turned into him being a wanted commodity. Because if you remember last year, Terry, what did the Pacers pay him? 1.5?
Yeah, he got the veterans minimum like David West is going to get in San Antonio. And the thing is, you know, he just played terrifically, had to start a lot of games because George Hill was hurt early, and the guy had four other clubs after him besides us. I'm really, really happy with this deal getting done.
Stuckey wanted any reason whatsoever to get out of Detroit. He didn't see eye to eye with Stan Van Gundy, and so he took a chance on the Pacers. Little did he know that Paul George would crash into a stanchion and break his leg. David West would get hurt. Roy Hibbert. George Hill was in and out. And Stuckey was hurt a little bit last year, too.
Yeah.
He had some foot problems that kept him in and out of the lineup. But the good news is he was the Pacers' high-scoring sixth man, averaging almost 13 points a game, 44% from the field, his highest shooting mark of his 8-career season. So obviously likes the backdrop at Conseco Fieldhouse. Nothing wrong with that. Another career high, 39% of his threes, Terry. Stuckey, who seems like he's been in the league for 50 years, is only 29. He's
yes.
the same age as Monte Ellis. So you wrap up Ellis in a 4-year, $44 million deal, and then you throw in Stuckey, and there's your two-guard spot signed up. At least for the next 3 years, you hope if Stuckey takes his option after those three. So the Pacers' backcourt there has some firepower in it.
Yeah, no, this is good. And the second-round draft choice, Joe Young, he finally played this afternoon. He's been ill. I'm sure they're going to have another guard in that lineup. Right now they don't. And then, of course, you've got C.J. Miles. You've got Paul George, Solomon Hill that can kind of swing around in different spots. The backcourt looks solid right now.
It does, except for the Pacers. Point guard position. The one knock the Pacers have been trying to get over the last couple of years is not having a true point guard. I don't know if you need that in the NBA, but here's the key. I don't think the Pacers need it when Paul George is 100%. We saw last year George Hill had a man a lot of the minutes there. Donald Sloan, okay. From every report I've read, Bird's people haven't reached out to Sloan. He's
right.
not even in the conversation. C.J. Watson, somebody thought highly of him, signed a 4-year, $15 million deal with Orlando, right?
Right.
So that wasn't, again, the Pacers signed all these guys for a couple million here and there, and they played well enough. They played themselves into new contracts. You couldn't, by the cap, keep all these guys. So what do the Pacers do moving forward? This new high-octane, up-tempo offense sure sounds like it needs a conductor. Who's that going to be?
It's going to be either one of them. See, that's the thing. George Hill will be better when he is just running up and down the floor. Monte Ellis, they're both slash guards. They can play either position. You know, when George Hill has to come down, dribble, set, throw to the corner, everybody wants to dump it to Roy. You know, oh, that 24-second clock's
and
running down.
Stop.
That's not good. You could see it a little bit last year when George Hill came back and they up-tempoed a little bit more than usual without Paul George. And you could see George flourished, just getting the ball to where he wanted to get it and taking a shot or kicking it out. And with Monte Ellis able to do the same thing, and he's a better scorer than George Hill.
Yes, he is.
And a better shooter. And I think the two of them, there's your two starting guards. And they'll just trade it off with Paul George also being able to bring the ball
and
up the floor.
Throw Stuckey in there and C.J. Miles, and you've got some guys that can put the ball in the basket. But the problem for the Pacers moving forward is no matter how small you are, how small you'd like to go, remember, the Golden State Warriors had Andrew Bogut, was what, first team all NBA defense last year. They abandoned him for the last three games of the NBA Finals, but when they went 65-15, he was a large part of that. You have to have guys that can protect the rim. Timothy Mozgov showed you how well he played in the finals. I don't think you can be without that position, but the rumor that's been swirling around all weekend is that Roy Hibbert will be traded to the Los Angeles Lakers on July 9 when the free agent moratorium ends and players can be signed. It sounds like the Pacers are going to send $2.5 or $3 million in cash with Hibbert to pay the Lakers to take them off their books and put them on the Lakers' books, and the Pacers will receive either a second-round draft pick or rights to an international player that they are never going to see or touch because they want the cash. And that cash can open up some doors. It's opened up with Rodney Stuckey a little bit.
Yes.
Monte Ellis for David West was almost a like-for-like, so there's a little bit more wiggle room in there where the Pacers are going to have to add some front court pieces, because if you started the season today, Larry Bird has remarked, we want to play Paul Moore at the four. That's cool. You've got Ellison Hill. You've got George and Miles. There's your four. Your fifth guy is Mahimi. Lavoy Allen,
right.
Is Miles Turner, when he finally gets his ears wet a little bit, is that enough to compete in the East?
No.
I think you need a couple more players. And
I'm hoping that some of the gossips.
Scola?
Well, I want Luis Scola badly, because also he will run the floor at 6'9", to where David West never did run the floor.
He was never healthy that last year. That was the only thing that bothered me about West.
Yeah.
He wasn't.
And
healthy.
Then the other person, there's talk, and I think he would help because he's 7 feet. Robert Sacre might be involved.
The former Gonzaga man.
The former Gonzaga.
Ryan Kelly has also been mentioned in there. He's a 6'11 spot up as a stretch four. Remember his annoyance at Duke. He missed a lot of time there because it seemed like he had a broken foot every 5 minutes.
I'd rather have Sacre and sign Rudez again for a long shooting four at 6'10". That's what I'd rather
do. The Pacers have tried it with Rudez. They've tried it with Copeland. And what they've got from that position is hardly any defense.
No defense.
Now, if the defense is not going to be the center stone of this franchise moving forward, then you've got to have guys that can run and shoot the ball. I'm not sure Copeland qualifies for any of that either, but that is the scuttlebutt, is that Ryan Kelly, Robert Sacre could be involved. Our possibilities to go in the Hibbert deal. Remember, none of this stuff has to even be worked out until July 9th. That's when the 7-day moratorium on free agency ends and all these deals can start being official. The Lakers are looking to sign Brandon Bass, who's a 6'9 forward, who makes Kelly and Sacre makes them a little expendable on the side of that. But I think that one of the most interesting things that came out over the weekend was David West finally spoke, and he spoke to Bob Kravitz from WTHR, and there's a couple interesting quotes from West. If you haven't heard them, I'll give them to you briefly. Not maybe perhaps on David West and why he's signing for San Antonio for $1.5 million and leaving $12.6 million on the table with the Pacers. It's kind of what's going on with him and the Pacers and basketball in itself. At this point in my career, I just want to win, West said. I'm not sure the Pacers are in title contention right now. I'm going into my 13th season, and I'll be 35 soon. When I got to Indiana, there was a hope of getting there, and we played at a really high level for a couple of years. But I just don't know if the team is in the position to win right now, and I don't know if I'd have that opportunity to win a title if I stayed with the Pacers. Well, the Pacers right now, if you trade David West for Monte Ellis, if you're going to play up-tempo, you can't do it with 34, 35-year-old guys that are sometimes healthy and sometimes hurt. Ellis is 29. I understand he's been in the league forever. But you can't have Ellis and West. So if people say, oh, my gosh, it would have been nice if the Pacers – no, West was under contract for $12.6 million. The people are happy in San Antonio because he accepted their $1.5 million offer.
Exactly.
He left $11 million.
I know
that high. Why? Well, because he described last year as his longest, most emotionally draining year of his career. He wasn't very happy watching the finals. At this point in my career, it's all about winning. And again, I don't want to be in a position where we're just fighting to make the playoffs. I want to be in a spot where we, the frog in his pocket, can legitimately taste the finals. He wasn't real happy the way that Roy was thrown under the bus. He stuck up for his buddy Hibbert. He said, hey, if we're all in this, we're all in this together. It bothered him that, I'm paraphrasing here, that Hibbert got all the grief for it. He said watching the finals changed his mind. And here's his words, and he's not lying. Not one bit. Absolutely, it was not a financial decision. And that's what's so perplexing to people, West said. I just want an opportunity to win it all. We tried it in Indiana a couple of years. I was really, really disappointed when Paul got hurt, but I just felt like the window has been slammed shut. I had some opportunities when I could have been traded last year, but I said no. I wasn't going to abandon the guys like that. I'm not that way. I'm not built that way. I stuck it out. So he did.
Yeah.
He didn't. He could have walked. The Pacers could have cleared their books last year with him. Again, missed the playoffs by one game. They were ninth after the injury problems. Paul George returning late, but didn't really provide enough of a spark. So as the Pacers move forward, Terry, what will be the solution to their front court issues? Well, we'll dive into that and see what issues are available. Is there even that guy out there? Is there that veterans exemption that maybe they found a little bit with Stuckey last year? Are there holes to plug? Well, there are holes to plug. Are there any big-time players that are going to help the Pacers get over that hump? We'll discuss that next. Final break, then we're back to wrap things up. 6:47, you're in the zone on WGCL. At WGCL. Glass and Terry with you in the zone here on a Monday night. Reds baseball, 7 p.m. Monday through Friday this week. We'll even throw in a 4 o'clock Saturday game for you as the Reds try to look to end the first part of the 2015 season on a better note after being swept by Milwaukee. On the weekend, they head to Washington, D.C. tonight, and then it's Miami to wrap things up before the All-Star Game and All-Star Break, the All-Star Game. Home Run Derby a week from tonight, the Great American Ballpark. There's been a few home runs hitting that park, so that'll be a fun one to watch. Todd Frazier from the Reds will be the starting third baseman for the National League, and will be also in the Home Run Derby as well. Fun stuff. And then Tuesday night, the Midsummer Classic, as the American League and National League get together to determine home field advantage in what is the dumbest conclusion of any organized professional sport, where you have millions of fans stuffing the internet ballot box fraudulently as possible, and one of the teams will determine World Series advantage. 162 games wasn't enough to determine who the best team is. Let's go to the internet, Terry, to determine that completely and utterly ridiculous. We'll probably talk more about that next Monday night. The All-Star Game is not going anywhere. We are talking Pacers tonight. No Roy Hibbert, no David West. The front court, Lavoy Allen. Tried that last year. Jan Mihimini. Tried that last year. And 19-year-old Miles Turner. Luis Scola is a free agent, and there are no rumblings or bumblings. You'd like to have him back, but there's nothing that says he is coming back. The money they're throwing at some of these journeyman players is quite ridiculous. Where do the Pacers go for front court help? Do they need it? Is this truly a new style of basketball, Terry Stultz?
Doesn't matter. They still need some bigs. Yeah, I mean, I would love to see him get Luis Scola. I think if you get him and the other guy, and please throw Robert Sacre in there for Big Roy. And that may put us at a good spot. But, even if they want to run, you've still got to have that big. I mean, let's face it. Right now, you're going to depend on your 19-year-old 11th pick or Jan Mihimi, which, I mean, I like Jan coming off the bench. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, he's a good plotter. He's not going to get you 10 and 10 each night out.
You know, Whittington that's on the team, he's not going to play. Well, I know. He's 6'11".
I know.
He's not going to help.
He's not going to help. And Solomon Hill's had two years to try and help. He can't even get on the
– Well, he's 6'8". He's still playing the wing.
He's a first-round draft pick that's not helping anything. So 6'8 on the wing, 6'8 up front, he's not contributing any way, shape, or form. So we're panning for gold at this point. And I'm not sure how many ducats the Pacers have laying around where they can go out and fill that hole with buying somebody on anything but a one-year veteran, that $4.5 million exemption, or the one-time veteran $1.5 million deal. I'm not sure how much flexibility they have to even fill that spot.
Yeah, and who's available? I mean, I have not today did not go on and check the list of who's who and who's where and who might be somewhere. So we'll see.
And we got to see when all these trades work themselves out, whenever they become official, and who is left behind, who is not signed, who is moving. Once some of these have to be signed and traded and approved and traded again, you almost need an accounting degree to keep up with all of this. But the Pacers moving forward, if they are going to get smaller, that's fine. as we saw in the Eastern Conference Finals, as we saw in the NBA Finals, the title goes through one city and one city only, and that's going to be Cleveland.
Yes.
It is not going to be Golden State. Golden State's going to be a very nice team. They're going to run into – Steph Curry is the sixth highest paid player on that team. That's what's happening there. They got a bunch of guys making a ton of money. That's not going to all stay together forever. They got a nice little window here. Can they shoot themselves into title contention? I think they can, but I don't think there's any doubt that LeBron James is the best basketball player. And for the Pacers to even dream about seeing David West's face in a San Antonio jersey, or Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, or Kobe Bryant and Roy Hibbert, Golden State, whatever it is, they've got to go through the Cleveland Cavaliers. And that's where that starts. And you look at that team. Cleveland showed you last year, when you have premium players missing, how hard it is to do what they did. And they still won two games in the finals, which was quite amazing. That's with no Kyrie Irving, who's an all-star point guard, and Kevin Love, who's been a perennial all-star forward. The Pacers lost a center who was good for a while and a four guy who was better in the locker room than he was probably on the court because of nagging injuries the last, 9 months or so. So the Pacers have added by subtracting, but did they have enough pieces, do you think, to take on Cleveland? Or are they just going to have to hope that Paul George gets back to 110% of Paul George?
Well, that'll be the biggest thing. You know, throughout the draft or any of these trades, I think we're getting back the best player that anybody else has got, except for maybe Cleveland getting back Kyrie. We're getting back Paul George. And that's going to be a tremendous boost.
George healthy enough to carry an 82-game season? That's going to
be
the next question.
Yeah.
Is George going to be able to play 38 minutes a night or 28 minutes a night? That's going to be another question. Is George going to be back to his attacking the rim, getting to the foul line self? These are all questions that you can't answer on the 6th day of July, but you're right. If he returns to Paul George form, the Pacers will be much better than they will be hauling Roy Hibbert and West up and down the court.
Yeah.
That's not going to be an issue anymore as of July 9th when those trades finally go through. And we'll see what's next for the blue and gold. But at least they've done something, Terry. They said they're going to get a little bit smaller and they'll get a little bit more active. They've brought in plenty of these guys. And now we'll see if they can fill it up the hoop.
They'll be back in the playoffs.
Well, we hope so. And we'll fill it back up on Wednesday night. Thank you for being with us, Dave. We'll be back. Reds baseball is next. You've been in the zone.